Greetings and welcome to another edition of AUHSD Future Talks. I'm your host, Michael Matsuda, the superintendent of the Anaheim Union High School District. And as our audience knows, this show is dedicated to the future of work and college and careers. And the future is right now, as our audience knows. So we've had a tremendous guest, and today I'm very delighted to introduce the president of Burning Glass, Mr. Matt Siegelman. Matt, welcome to our little show.
Mike, it's great to be together. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So can you tell the audience a little bit about your organization, Burning Glass?
So the Burning Glass Institute is a nonprofit research center that's focused on the intersection of the future of work and the future of learning. And we do that by taking a very data-driven approach. We analyze millions of job openings every day. We look at the career histories of tens of millions of U.S. workers and hundreds of millions around the world, to understand how are people reaching opportunity, where are people getting stuck, and where are the opportunities today, and how is that all changing?
So you've been doing sort of a mic drop about this issue of traditional pathways versus the skills needed in high impact areas for this country. Could you go a little bit deeper into that in your study that you, Burning Glass, released recently, the American Opportunity Index? For our audience, could you just go deeper in terms of that sort of disconnect that you're finding in traditional pathways?
So look, I think, we've been living in a job market that's been characterized by talent shortages that are dominating the headlines. And even now, as we're starting to hear, some headlines about layoffs and the like, we know there's a lot of talent shortage. At the other hand, we also know that there's a lot of people who are stuck in jobs that really don't have a lot of way up. And we know that there's increasing concern about the continued vitality of the American dream. And you put those two things together and it doesn't feel like they should make sense, right? And I think one of the, from spending two decades now studying the labor market, I can tell you that one of its greatest tragedies is also one of its greatest opportunities. It's kind of what your side view mirror tells you, that objects and mirror are closer than they appear. And very often talent and opportunity live just a few skills away. You'll see people getting stuck and you'll see jobs that are going unfilled. And when you compare what are the underlying skills of both, the gaps aren't all that big. So this is solvable. So we've spent a lot of time at the Burning Glass Institute together with some colleagues. We've done a bunch of work together, for example, with the Harvard Business School project on managing the future of work. And one of the things we've looked at is how do people actually rise? And first of all, there's some good news here, right? So we've done some earlier work both together, again, with my colleague Joe Fuller at Harvard and also some work that we've done earlier with the Schultz Family Foundation, where we looked at, in one case, people who are stuck in what are often called poverty trap jobs, and looked at, do they rise? And if so, how? And then similarly, we did some work together with Schultz looking at people who are often referred to as opportunity youth. So these are young adults who are not in school and not in a job, so considered very high risk. In both cases, we found about half on the one side of people in poverty trap jobs and the other side of opportunity youth had over the course of 5 years progressed to living wage jobs. So on the one hand, that says that it's possible to climb. On the other hand, the glass is half empty, right? So there's a lot of people who are still getting stuck. Now, when we looked into that, one of the things that surprised us, we looked at, how do people rise? And we found that, what job you're in, what career you start in matters a bunch, what sector you work in, what industry. what kind of pattern you have of switching jobs, all those things make sense. But one of the biggest factors, Mike, was where you work. That is what company you work for. And so you could literally have two workers who are working in the exact same role at directly competing employers who have entirely different prospects of moving up.
Now, why is that? What are the differences?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with this. You know, what kind of culture does the company have of promoting from within? To what extent do they see their existing talent as future talent? You know, that sounds pretty basic. That of course you're going to look at people and their potential, but actually it's actually pretty hard. It's a different mindset to look at somebody who's working as a clerk and be able to say, hey, she could be my cyber analyst tomorrow. And most companies don't necessarily have that. So we set out to measure to what extent companies are unlocking opportunity for their workers. And so we track the careers of 3 million people who are working at Fortune 250 companies over the course of 5 years. And we looked at what happened to them. So this is very much about creating a yardstick about outcomes. It's not about looking and saying, well, hey, here's a company that's offering certain kinds of benefits. Just, hey, did their workers rise? Did their workers get stuck? When people left, did they wind up in a better job or did they were they just treading water?
So one of the things, let me get this.
Please. Yeah. Right.
One of the things is that you've identified sort of a disconnect between formal education and skills. And I think that's a huge mic drop because you're talking about maybe re-examining bachelor's degrees or master's degrees. And here's someone, Matt, you know, you have an MBA from Harvard and your bachelor's from Princeton. So, and I know your organization has really changed a lot of folks' thinking. And in fact, I'm looking at this headline from Pennsylvania Office of the Governor, how they're re-examining the bachelor's degrees. And this is something that former President Barack Obama actually praised, that we need to re-examine sort of the gatekeepers. Can you go a little bit deeper into that disconnect?
You know, I think a lot of the problem right now, so part of the problem is historical and part of the problem is is that nature abhors a vacuum. So talk about the historical problem, which is that historically, one of the things that we know is that when there's in past recessions, as there's more unemployment, you find that employers tend to erect degree requirements. They think, okay, well, if I can have my pick of having somebody with a degree or without a degree, I might as well pick the person with the degree. And then, by the way, once those degree requirements are there, you don't necessarily take them out. In fact, I often feel like looking through the billions of job postings we've collected together with colleagues at a company called Lightcast, which I founded a number of years ago. But one of the things you kind of get a sense of is being kind of a little bit of an archaeologist because of these layers of sediment. Somebody put in a requirement at some point over the time and it just stuck. We're now in a much more data-driven world and it's possible to re-examine those kinds of requirements. And so we're seeing, I think, a desire on the part of employers, particularly in a tight labor market, to re-examine those requirements. But the other question here, so if part of this is history, part of this is culture and mindset. And what we know is that, you have a way of doing things. And for a lot of hiring managers, that's involved hiring for a degree. Saying before, the example of, hey, if I've got somebody with a degree in front of me or somebody without, for a lot of hiring managers, the what my kids would call the no duh is, well, of course you want the person with the degree. Well, actually, when you do the analysis for a lot of roles, that's the wrong decision. That person with the degree is looking for her way out of that job as fast as she can if it's she doesn't think it's worthy of her degree. And is often less likely to not only stay, but to give the highest level of performance. But that's the proxy we have. And I say proxy because what employers are really trying to get a sense for is how much gumption you have, the kind of level of foundational skill and adaptability that you have and persistence. And they look at a degree as a way of measuring that. Why? Because we don't have any others. And so that's why I said there's that nature abhors a vacuum. Right now, we've got not a lack of other credentials. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce tracks demand for something like 1.2 million credentials out there through their Credential Engine project, which is a terrific endeavor. But here's the problem. I always have to remind people there's only 114,000 words in the Oxford English Dictionary. We have 1.2 million credentials and only 114,000 words in the English language. Our problem is not that we don't have enough credentials. Our problem is that we have no way of making sense of all of them. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you've got that kind of chaos, that inability to hear the signal from the noise, to distinguish the signal from the noise, you're going to continue to have employers relying on inefficient proxies like college degrees.
You know, I'm very interested in this topic in terms of what does AI do to the workforce as well. And I've been listening to people like Seth Godin, who says that AI will make mediocrity in the workforce obsolete. And when you look at ChatGPT and all of that, so we're really looking at it from the also from an education K-12 standpoint as well. But can you comment on some of this? Because now the chat is all about AI and its effect on the workforce. What are your thoughts on that?
So first of all, in general, I'm an optimist. I do believe both in general, both in life and with regard to AI, I do believe that there are tremendous capabilities that AI puts at the disposal, of workers across a broad array of occupations. And you see this already, a number of software developers I know who are already finding this to be enormously helpful in helping them to identify the right sets of code, and also illustrating why you still need a human in the loop. Because even with really surprisingly effective capabilities, there's a level of judgment that's required to be able to evaluate different potential strings of code, to be able to integrate the best of various kinds, to be able to understand truly what's fit for purpose. And I think we're a long way from the human being out of the loop, if that's ever possible. And so all of that says there's a lot of opportunity here to really empower people and to make people's work more valuable. And more on in a minute on why I think that's so important right now. But go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think that this whole you wrote an article recently in Fortune about that we need to focus on the jobs that move the needle forward for American competitiveness. This goes back to what you're saying about credentials and the and where AI's role in STEM is, where it all converges. What advice do you give us in K-12 or even K-16 education in terms of where we need to be focusing our dollars and our resources on to create these pathways?
So one of the things which technology has been doing for decades is enabling people to work across domains effectively. It's been also taking advanced technology out of the exclusive domain of specialists and providing access to it to lay folks like us. That's incredibly exciting. And you can see that already. There's a lot of things that you're able to do, even through something like Microsoft Office that you would have needed, if you wanted to have a spreadsheet or something like that, you needed an accountant or something of that. Before now, you can create your own financial models, and a lot of people do. So there's also just one very small example, but you see those across the board. So the question here is, what gives people The ability to leverage those capabilities and make the most effective use of technology. In other words, if technology is now increasingly out of the domain of specialists into the domain of things that everyone should be able to use, what skills give each of us the ability to maximize that? And I would say that a core part of this is doubling down on the heritage of American education, both at the K-12 level and certainly America's liberal arts tradition, in making sure that everyone's got real strength around core foundational skills. By core foundational skills, though, I think it's important to recognize that that goes beyond the three R's. Four R's? Gosh, I can't even remember. reading, writing, arithmetic. Okay, three. But increasingly now, the world of foundational skills involves sets of data skills, sets of technology skills, and sets of business skills that everybody needs. I know business skills sounds a little bit unorthodox to say that every K-12 student should be acquiring certain business skills, but take something like project management. Whether you're going into construction, whether you're in IT, whether you're going to be going to nursing. Nurses increasingly.
That's the fourth R, relational skills. The relational.
I like it.
Right.
So I knew I was saying four R's for a reason.
Yeah. What do you say, Matt, to those who are into, well, the soul equity, because I know that your equity is in your heart. It's basically a driver. But there are some who might say, well, Matt, what you're doing is sort of dumbing it down when you say that we need to, because we've been fighting. People have been in social justice fighting for a bachelor's degree, like getting into college. And getting that degree is such a measure of equity.
I think the question is, why is getting a degree a measure of equity? I think I want to go back to, I think there's two parts of what the implications are of this are for how we pursue a more equitable workplace and a more equitable society. I'd say, first of all, we need to make sure that the jobs that are going to define America's future, the jobs that are going to define American competitiveness in the decades ahead, are ones to which everyone has access. That's not just a point of what's fair. It's a point of what we need in order to be competitive. You can't win a game if you've got half your team on the bench. 60% of Americans don't have a college degree. We can't be truly competitive. We can't have the talent base we need at a time when we can't, unfortunately, agree on a strategy for broadening migration. At the same time, we have declining demographics. We've got the workforce that's shrinking for the first time in history. So that means that we've got to make sure everyone's coming along. So if there's ways that we can, pathways that we can unlock, then we need to do it. At the same time, and sorry, Mike, just one other quick thing on this. But that also doesn't mean that we shouldn't be working very hard to make sure that we have good routes into and beyond degrees for everyone as well. But the thing I would say there is we need to hold ourselves to a higher bar. Right now, we've been fighting very hard and appropriately to increase representation on campus at colleges and universities. And we've made terrific progress, hopefully more. And obviously we're all worried about where the court's going to come down in June. But no matter what is decided, we also know that Black and Latino students are underserved at colleges and universities. We know that the percentage of students who graduate is lower. We know that the chances that Black and Latino students wind up underemployed, that is in jobs that aren't worthy of their degree, is much higher. List goes on, the chance their lifetime earnings are lower. And so if we're going to truly work to have to ensure the equity of our education system and our higher education system in particular, we need to set our equity compass on outcomes, not just on representation on campus.
That's a big challenge for the system, which operates under years of sort of CYA, right? Because it takes a lot of courage to say, we don't necessarily have to require a bachelor's or an MBA if we're focused on skills. And we're beginning to see some movement there. Could you share with our listeners what that movement is in terms of corporations or states that are reexamining the need for these degrees?
So it's been a very exciting moment. We've done some work tracking the progress of what's called skills-based hiring. So this is employers hiring not for a specific degree, but hiring for but looking actually at the skills that applicants bring with them and see whether the right sets of skills. Overall, we've our research shows about a 14% decline in the prevalence of employers requiring degrees for the jobs that they have open. That's good news. But I think it's important to recognize as well that there's still a gap between policy, in other words, what employers are trying to affect, and I think trying to affect with good sincerity, and practice in terms of what's actually bearing out. So, for example, in our analysis, we looked at we focused on the tech industry because the tech industry has been very vocal about saying, hey, we don't care whether you have a degree, we just care whether you can code. But we found that for a lot of the big tech players, most of their jobs still require a degree. And that hasn't necessarily changed. And so I think what that shows is that to make progress, again, we need alternatives, number one. And number two, we've got to find ways to help hiring managers get past their assumptions about people without degrees.
Well, we have a very robust internship and mentoring with over 100 corporations, and I've had the opportunity to meet some CEOs and HR directors, and they still do hire, especially in STEM fields, with a degree, but they said this point that you made earlier, they lack project management skills. They lack people, basic customer service skills. And so that's really informed me and educators that are trying to realign what we teach and how we teach to focus on these skills, communication, creativity, collaboration, critical thinking, and we have compassion, which we're trying to develop sort of this whole child, right? So they become more actualized, self-actualized adults and navigating this complex area. So I think, as you pointed out, we are really at a critical juncture. And in this article, you say that, you know, I think America, and I would agree with you, that America needs a pathway forward that appeals to the right and the left, right? And your bottom line is like, hey, we need to focus on these critical jobs if America is to stay competitive. And I think in the few minutes left, can you double down on your point about appealing to both sides of the spectrum? Because people like me, we're caught in the middle in these public school debates right now.
Clowns to the left and jokers to the right. I think this is a unique moment, because on the one hand, there's so much rancor out there, and on the other side, I think there's a growing awareness on all sides of the spectrum that we need to be doing better for American workers, that we need to really reinvest in the vitality of the American dream. And so things like apprenticeships, and I know that you've been very active in Anaheim at making sure that there are direct paths to help students who to get trained into jobs that give them a career and give them options of what they can do if they aren't going to go on to college. Things like your partnership with Grow with Google, and making sure that every student has access to the kinds of skills that will give them optionality and currency in the market, regardless of where they're going, are things which I think we can all agree on as being really important. So I think there's a lot of good news here. There's a lot of bipartisan support for apprenticeships. There's a lot of bipartisan support for policies that are putting American workers forward. And what I'd sort of leave here is this. What we need to do together as a nation is say, look, there are certain sets of talent that we're going to need, and which are key to providing workers with upward opportunity. At the same time, are key to providing, to building competitiveness and to addressing employer pain points, issues of both the left and the right. And how do we make sure that we are unlocking talent for those jobs that in turn unlock opportunity for people? I think when we can do that, like I said before, I'm an optimist, and maybe this proves I'm not just an optimist, but naive. But I really think that there's a way forward that is a very bright one.
You know, Matt, I know our time is out, but I was really looking forward to this because of obviously this level of discussion is needed in America. We need people that are big thinkers that can bring our country together so that we can move forward and retain our status as a just a great and powerful country. Matt, on behalf of our little community of 27,000 students in Anaheim, we are so grateful to have you as a guest, and we look forward to hearing more about Burning Glass and the American Opportunity Index. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.